People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Fine Music Radio and Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. And the emphasis this week, you'd be keen to hear, is on jazz. And my guest is the Cape Town-born composer, pianist, multi-instrumentalist and raconteur, Hilton Schilder, who, as you'll hear, is always producing something new. His mastery with 16 indigenous and conventional instruments is renowned, and Hilton has undoubtedly helped to mold the sound of what is now known as Cape Town jazz. He's globally recognized and has featured on more than 40 jazz albums, punk, rock, guma, world music, and classical albums. And in fact, one of the reasons I've invited him here is he's launching his 46th album in just 2 days' time on Tuesday. So, Hilton, welcome. It's good to have you here in the studio.
Lovely being here, Rodney.
I feel I'm with jazz royalty as a non-jazz expert. Before we go about your extraordinary career, tell me what's happening on Tuesday. What is this 46th album of yours?
Okay. We'll be launching my 46th album my young group at Artscape in the theater, the 500-seater.
Yes.
And the album is a dedication to three of my comrades that have fallen. Well, it's four now. It was Mac McKenzie, Tony Cedras, and Stephen Erasmus, who passed in the last few months, you know.
Oh, okay.
And now Joe Finn also, who was also played with me in the 70s, you know.
So it's sort of a tribute almost.
It's a tribute to the fallen guys. Robbie's also included there. Yeah. But the three guys that I concentrated on, because I lost them recently, is quite sad for me, is Mac and Stephen and Tony Cedras.
All right. So is it all original music that you have written?
It's all original stuff. We're doing a tribute to, like, I'm quoting one of Stephen's songs in the opening, and then we're doing two of Mac's compositions. We've got a special guest on the show. It's my daughter, actually.
Oh, that's very nice. Yeah, is your daughter also a musician?
Yes, but my kids have chosen a different life. They're both musicians. She's been performing with me since she was 6 years old, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she's 42 now.
Right, that's a long time.
Yeah, so it's, but I mean, she's chosen a different career, and she's got three kids, and, you know, she's a mom.
But at least she's part of the
celebration. She's part of the music, She'll never lose it, yeah.
This launch that you're doing, when you launch a CD like this, there are various ways of launching it. Presumably because you're launching it in this theater, it'll be a live band playing the music on the album.
Yeah.
But the album has already been recorded and is ready
to
release. Yeah,
we recorded it last year at Aki's studio, Akbakan, Penny Lane. Beautiful, lovely studio with the beautiful grand piano that apparently used to belong to Ray Charles or something.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Something to do with Ray Charles, or he played on it or something like that. But it's a beautiful piano, and Aki offered me, he said, look here, don't you want to come and do an album here, you know, and you can pay what you can, which I love to hear. So
I went in
with my group, and we put down 15 tracks.
Whoa.
In 2 days. We put down 15 tracks.
That's a bit of a record, I'm sure.
It is. Well, I'm used to doing, like, when we worked with Paddy and Murray, with Robbie, we used to lay down our whole album in a matter of 2 days, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Always we were the one-take wonders.
I see. It's interesting you mentioned Murray, because I've just had him as a guest on People of Note, Milestone Studios.
Yes.
And he was explaining how quickly people can work, but also how meticulous people have to be. Retakes.
In the studio.
There's a bit of a luxury in Cape Town, it seems, with a good few studios about, like Milestone.
Oh, yes, there's lots of.
And also the one you've just said.
Yeah,
you recorded,
Penny Lane.
So this launch is releasing your 46th album.
Yeah.
So I'm just keen to know how old you were when you released your very first album. Were you a young man?
I think I was in my 20s.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I was in my 20s. I'm in my 60s now, but I was in my 20s when I released the first album. But that was with the Genuines.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. Yes. We did five albums with the Genuines.
Mm-hmm.
And that was with Mac McKenzie and Gerard O'Brien and Ian Herman.
It's interesting hearing about friends of yours and colleagues of yours that have passed on. Mm. because the jazz community, I've discovered, is very, very close. You people who are jazz musicians, yeah, who work together, you become, it's quite intimate in a way, isn't it, the way you work?
Yes, well, I mean, it's more than, I don't want to compare to classical musicians, but classical musicians have a really hard time because they have to get it right.
Yeah,
it's that discipline of getting things right. We have jazz.
Yes.
You don't really have to get it right, although, I mean, it sounds wrong if it's wrong, you know.
Yes,
but
yes,
the thing is, it's more relaxed. So
and there's that improvisatory nature as well.
Exactly.
Which can take you off on a tangent.
Look, I've got the violinist that plays with me. She's classically trained, mm-hmm, Shay Malakai, and she's actually managed to hear other melodies. I mean, she can take a sheet of music and just play Dvorak or whatever. She can just play it, you know.
Right.
But with me, she's got to do it to the ear. And otherwise, I mean, there are parts written out, but she prefers to learn it by ear.
Uh-huh.
And I like it like that.
Well, it's probably more spontaneous then.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. But also they have to stick this, and that's where I can see her classical training comes in. She doesn't like to make a mistake.
Okay.
You know,
good for her.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
Keep our flag flying. But Hilton, in this album, what is the instrumentation? How many instrumentalists, okay, and what do they play?
Oh, okay. So I'm on piano and mouth bow and this nose flute, you know.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
It's strange sound.
It's very strange, yeah. And then I've got Ruby Truter on vocals. Unfortunately, she's only on one track. She's only on one track. On the other ones is on the next album. I was telling you about the 15 tracks. So we separated 8 tracks in that. We mixed and mastered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Crooks and Nannies. That's the album. The next one's going to be called Nooks and Crannies, which is the original title.
Oh, so that's the next album?
Yes,
number,
yes.
Number 47.
That's right. And then there's a solo piano album that I recorded with Murray in 2020 during COVID. That was my COVID operation, you know.
Yes, yes.
And my son produced it. So that's also coming out now.
Gosh, so you are busy, because it said in the introduction here, you're always producing something new.
I have to. It's my restless nature. Also, I mean, a little background about me. I got diagnosed with cancer in 2010. That was like 15 years ago.
Yes.
And when you have a sickness like that, it's you know, you never know when it's going to be your last. But
and
I mean,
also
I've been,
the shock.
And the shock of it. But the thing is this, I've got fantastic, my wife's an incredible woman, and we've been married for 43 years, you know, and mm-hmm, she's got, she's been a real strength, you know what I mean, and my kids,
yeah,
and the grandchildren. Also, the positive thing, you know, if you allow yourself to worry about things like that, you know, it'll get you down. So it's 15 years later, you know.
And here you are, still.
I'm still standing
alive and kicking.
And I have lots of things to do.
Good. And that'll keep you busy and
oh,
keep
yeah,
the cancer away.
Definitely.
Now, you being a musician, I'm interested to know what music you've chosen. So what's the first piece that you've chosen?
Okay, well, this is one of my favorite, in fact, it was my guru, you know, Hermeto Pascoal. He's a Brazilian composer, incredible all around, but he died in the week, you know, and it was a great loss for me.
No, this last week?
Yes, he died now. It was a show I was devastated. This is an album that he did where he plays all the instruments. He's playing, he's a multi-instrumentalist, you
like
know.
You.
We have a similar kind of approach to music, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is Hermeto Pascoal.
There you are, music by Hermeto Pascoal, yeah. A Brazilian, you said.
Yes, Brazilian composer and all-rounder, you know, really amazing.
He's the first choice of my guest on this week's edition of People of Note, who is the Cape Town-born composer, musician, multi-instrumentalist, which I want to come to, Hilton Schilder. Now, Hilton, because of the number of people you know, I'm just interested to know where all this comes from, this passion, this talent.
Oh, the music.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, no, in you. Because apparently your father was Tony Schilder.
That's right. Tony, so, and he had a lot of brothers also, all musicians. There was Ibrahim, Chris Schilder, Ibrahim Shihab, and then Jackie Schilder, Philip Schilder, and Ronnie.
Gosh, that was a big family.
Yeah, and then all the sisters also. They were like 12. There was 12 of them.
My goodness.
And that's actually how my mom met my dad. She was in the choir with my dad's sister. They were in the choir, you know, because the music for me comes from both sides, from my mom and my dad, because my mom's dad was a classical pianist, you know, Adolf. His name was Adolf.
Oh, yes. Appropriate name.
Yeah, I didn't meet him. He died when I was about a year old.
Oh, okay.
I do remember my dad carrying him to the piano, and afterwards, I mean, because I've got a good memory, because I don't read and write music. I rely on my memory, so I have a certain way of filing things in my mind.
Yes, in your mind, that's right.
So I have a clear image of my father carrying my grandfather to the piano, and he played Chopin. And that was the last I saw him. I must have been about 2 or 3 years old.
Oh, and you still remember?
I do remember that scene.
My gosh.
Yeah.
So you had basically music in your home
all the
right
time.
From when you were born?
All the time. Look, my father had a group with Monty Weber and his younger brother Philip on double bass and Winston Mankunku. And they used to rehearse at our place in Weinberg.
Mm-hmm.
So I always saw musicians coming in and out. In fact, growing up, I thought people that didn't play music, I thought there was something wrong with them. Because it was just like not... I grew up in this beautiful musical bubble. And witnessing that from a very early age, you know, I started playing drums with my dad when I was 3 years old. You know, I used to have a little suitcase, one of those old brown suitcases.
Yes, that you took to school, yes.
Yes, and with a set of brushes that Monty Weber gave me, so I used to play with him. In fact, I was on the ship that sank. Remember the Oceanus that sank off the coast of Coffee
Really?
Bay? I was playing drums with my dad.
I remember that story very well, 91. And I also remember a book. And do you know who else was on it? It was Alvin Collison.
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
Alvin.
We laugh when we say Alvin because it was such a character.
No, because we took over the rescue of the ship because the captain left first.
That's right.
It was one of those stories.
Yeah,
you know?
It was ridiculous.
Alvin was a nightmare.
Yes, he was. We had him here for an interview.
I absolutely love him.
And we had to, you do love him, yes. Because
you can't help but like.
Exactly.
Because he would stop us in the middle of the show while we're backing me there. And that goes like that there. And don't forget it, they got darlings. And, you know, he would just
in
like
the middle
stop.
Of the show.
Yeah, he'd stop. My dad used to get so angry.
So you were on the Oceanos?
Yes, I was playing drums with my dad.
And you would have been rescued by a helicopter?
No. We were the last off. We jumped in the water.
No,
yes.
Don't.
We thought it was sharks, but it was actually dolphins. We thought it was sharks, you know, and coming, but now dolphins always come to shipwrecks. It's amazing. And it was off the coast of Coffee Bay.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. It was an amazing story.
It's quite story, yeah. I'd like something to tell my grandchildren.
So that was one of the dramatic moments, I'm sure, in your career to be on a shipwreck.
Yes,
in this day and age. But at that stage, you were clearly a musician by then. Did you study music at all, or did you? It's all privately learned.
I didn't study music at all. I mean, I had some of the best professors, you know what I mean?
Yes.
My father and his brothers.
That's right.
And people like Merton Barrow and Trevor Parker, Mac McKenzie. All these were all my musical mentors, you know, and. Mm-hmm. If I've left anyone out, I'm sorry, but I know I got mentored by a lot of people.
Yeah.
So that was my university growing up. I think it was quite a great university. When it came to the point where I actually didn't want to learn to read, I taught myself to read music. I didn't want to get into that. To me, it was a suppression of freedom, you know, having to read.
But then how did you notate all the things you've written?
Well, I got people to do it for me.
Okay.
Besides that, but... That's why I record a lot of my music, mm-hmm. and I do have a certain compartment in my head that files all the music.
Oh,
so if
yes,
I want to pull out a composition from, say, 1979, I can go to that file and pull it out. And
you'll remember every note.
If I do, my muscle memory takes over.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So you're not bogged down by written music. In fact, you're saying it gives you this freedom. Yeah.
But yet I'm doing a show with a tribute to Satima. It's called Satima's Africa. I'm reading, you know. Mm. I have to read. It's with Sean Janus and Winnie Bermans, and we're doing it. And Jolan. That's going to be at Daisy Jones. But okay, that's a different story altogether. But I'm leading on that one, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Hilton, just to catch up. So you were brought up in this very musical family.
Yes.
And it was then fait accompli that you were going to be a musician.
Yeah.
There was nothing else you wanted to do.
No, I didn't want to do anything else. I wanted to do music and art. And in fact, that's what I do now. I mean, my mother was an artist. So I've taken that as my career, music and art.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Mm. Do you in fact paint?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Another string to your bow, as they say.
Yeah.
All right, now we're going to take another piece of music, and I see we've got Frank Zappa here.
Oh,
what are we about to hear?
Well, Frank Zappa, I think we're taking from the Yellow Shark Dog Breath Variations.
Yes, okay.
Well, Frank Zappa, for me, was one of the Renaissance men of the 20th century. You know, he was absolutely the things he did, besides his rock stuff, his classical stuff that he did,
yes,
you know,
his
so-called serious music, you know. He did that, and of course he had to work with Maverick producers, you know, guys like Beloise, yeah,
mm-hmm.
And then the guy that did the Ensemble Modern, which this comes from, Ensemble Modern,
okay,
yeah, from Germany.
So here we have Frank Zappa.
Dog Breath Variations.
That was Frank Zappa. It was another choice of my guest, Hilton Schilder, on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week. And Hilton, Frank Zappa, you spoke about him doing classical stuff as well. I clearly remember a classical album years ago, which I actually had on LP, of Frank Zappa doing proper classical music.
With the London Symphony Orchestra.
Yes, that's right. And he was also very eccentric in his own way,
wasn't
he?
Completely. Completely. Well, I mean, the thing is he stood for a lot of things. I mean, people misunderstood him, but he was actually just like poking fun.
Yes,
at the media, at the, you know.
All sorts of things.
Yeah,
actually.
He was a real jester, you know, but incredible composer, incredible musician. He knew lots
you know,
of things.
We were talking just now about classical music.
Yeah.
And you must forgive me for asking you this because of my love of classical music and my lack of knowledge of jazz. But you said that you quite enjoy classical music.
I love classical music. You know, my dad introduced us to lots of different kinds of music. That was, I'm grateful for him. He introduced me to Indian music.
Oh, really?
Classical exotic, music. Yeah. The Goon Show. I always remember listening to The Goon Show on a Saturday, on a Sunday.
I was such a fan of The Goon Show, and still am.
So, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like that. I got a great education from my father, you know, besides the jazz. There was the other music, you know, and for myself, I also started listening to the folk music from different countries, the music from the earth, you know, like, say, Venezuelan music.
Yeah. The real folk music.
Peruvian and...
Did that influence your style in any way?
Definitely. I think I'm influenced by music of the world and also the instruments that I play, you know, it reflects...
They say you play 16 instruments.
On the one album, on the Rock Art album that I did with Alex Van Heer, and we recorded it in Sweden, in Stockholm, I'm playing about 16 instruments on there.
So, what sort of instruments? Because you're a keyboard first and foremost.
Well, piano, guitar, yes. Bass, drums, percussion, various flutes, the mouth bows, all the traditional instruments.
Yeah, all giving it, yes, that, to give it an exotic, in many ways, African sound as well.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You know what, since I've got you trapped in the studio here, and since you are credited with creating what's known as the sound of Cape jazz, and also Guma, would you be able to answer a question like that? What is Cape jazz?
Well, I can answer it. To me, I would say, I mean, I wouldn't say I created it. I'm just one of the people that had fallen. My dad is one of the guys of Cape jazz. Abdullah Ibrahim took Cape jazz to the... It's just that they called it Cape jazz here, you know. It doesn't necessarily have to be jazz, but it's got that... Because at the same time in Cape Town, when people talk about jazz, they talk about a dance. Where they're listening to, where they're dancing on American music. And that's, you'll find it in most of the clubs. There are people that say, oh, this is the jazz. So there's that whole thing about Cape jazz. What is it really, you know? Mm. And I think people like Abdullah and Harold Jafter and that have kind of put that jazz, put that from being from Cape Town, Bekim Seleku, you know, I would call that, that's all Cape jazz, you know, to me.
Okay.
But kind of... Paddy Leithorpe kind of put it into a nice box, and he got guys like Basil Coutsy and Robbie Jansen, myself, Chris Schilder, Pacific Express, and that. I mean, that's all like genres of Cape jazz. It's people that are playing jazz that are from Cape Town, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And then Guma?
Guma is the sound of the carnival, basically.
Yes.
The word Guma comes from the word Gami. Gumpi, it's an Indonesian word. Gumpi is a pregnant woman. It's called a gumpi. So the word guma comes from those.
Okay.
That's the etymology. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And
because the Cape Carnival had a unique sound, didn't it? The
minstrels.
Definitely.
Well, I mean, I'm borrowing from that.
Yes.
I've got the album called the Hilton Schilder Guma Club.
Yes.
And we kind of used the... we use the elements of the carnival, but we kind of, I wouldn't say sophisticated it. We call it Penthouse Guma.
Penthouse.
Well, it's something that me and Mac came up with.
Yeah, but in other words, you've taken it from the streets inside to a studio.
Same like they did with Bossa Nova when they took the wild samba and they kind of refined it into a little beautiful chord stuff. God, I mean, I love the music from Brazil, really,
That's the second time you've said that.
Yeah,
no,
I do. So I grew up with that.
Brazil.
Because my father also, he was so fascinated with Brazil. He went there. When he came back, he had this old Brazilian kind of sound, you know. He went away from the jazz into the more Brazilian kind of vibe, like Montreal and all those kind of songs.
And you also enjoy that.
I love the rhythms that come from Brazil. But I mean, you got to know that the rhythms from Brazil and all other countries, they all originate in Africa.
Yes, of course.
Even the capoeira.
People forget that. They tend to forget
Capoeira as a martial art was taken with the bows, was taken from Angola. And it was developed in South America, in Rio. And those were slaves that took this music and dance over. So they had to pretend that it was a dance because they defended themselves from the death squads and that. Because the original capoeira guys used to dance with them. Razor blades between their toes. Oh. So they could, you know, those cutting, dancing, you know.
They could inflict harm with their dance.
Yes. Well, I mean, because they were defending themselves.
Yeah.
But I mean, as a martial art, it's got drums and it's got the and then they dance and they do all these strange dances. And
are you very experimental with chords and harmonies?
Definitely.
Would you say you have your own sound as a result of that?
I think I do.
What you use, what sort of harmonies you use, that sort of thing.
I think I do, because, I mean, the young people that play with me, they say, well, look at this. This sounds like Hilton, you know.
They can identify you.
My band calls me uncle.
Okay.
I've got young people in the band that's playing with me, you know. They're in their 20s and 30s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're fantastic musicians, you know. They're really, really good musicians.
Yeah.
And they got so much respect for the music, and that is why I'm very happy to. In fact, I've said it in lots of interviews, but this is actually one of the happiest I've been since the Genuines. You know, having a group like this, you know, I feel like. They're keeping me young.
Yes, exactly. I wonder what it is about it attracting younger people. You think that maybe younger people would be more interested in hip-hop or rock or something. But
yeah.
You're talking about a rather specialized form of jazz.
Yes. I mean, the kids are into hip-hop and that. And, I mean, I can see the way music is going now. With AI also, guys are just putting in a guitar and an AI.
Oh, dear.
That's exactly what I said. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
But people will always love live.
Of course
to see
will.
People.
Of course
live. You know, I mean, the DJs have kind of become the new rock stars, you know. The DJs are earning like $1 million a show, you know. I mean, it's...
Maybe I should become a DJ. Hilton, let's have another piece of music. What is your third choice? What have you chosen?
Well, Iberto Gismonti is also one of my favorites. He's also Brazilian.
Again, Brazil, I see.
Yes. Iberto Gismonti is a guitarist and piano player. He's still alive. He's been a great influence since the 70s. I've been listening to his stuff, and I kind of have an affinity. It's people that I have an affinity with, you know.
That you're sharing with us today.
Yes. So this piece, I guess it's a piece called Acqua di Vino, Acqua e Vino. It's about turning water into wine. I guess it's about that. It's a Jesus story. And he's just one of the absolutely beautiful composers that I love, you know.
There you are. That's music from Brazil. It seems to me as though my guest, Hilton Schilder, is really, you really are fascinated with Brazil, aren't you, Hilton? What was that called and who was that?
Oh, that was Heberto Gismonti, Aqua e Vino. Mm-hmm. It's about turning water into wine, I guess.
It's funny that you can immediately hear somehow Brazil has a sound, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely.
I'm sure many places have sounds, but Brazil has a sound about it, a certain sound.
Definitely.
Which you can pick up in these
And you
things.
See, I think we have a similarity because we also have a carnival here.
Yes.
That happens.
Yes.
We are on a similar longitudinal line.
Yes, we are.
Line.
We are.
So whenever I meet Brazilian people, I find an affinity with them because, you know, we have something at my home called the Jazz Safari, where we get people from around the world. They come to my home, and my wife cooks.
Oh, really?
So they stay from about 7:30 till 9 o'clock. And then afterwards, I give them a concert. And when I had some Brazilian people there, they said that I reminded them of Hermeto. I said, why? They said, no, it's just your aura. Your energy is very similar to and I was very pleased. Because
I'm sure
when when he performs, I was fantastic. It was fantastic to see him live. I saw him in Sweden, in Stockholm, when we were recording Rock Art with Alex.
Okay.
And we managed to see him. And wow, what a presence. There was just musicians in the crowd.
Yeah.
Musicians. He's a musician's musician.
I'm sure a lot of jazz lovers, true jazz lovers, are musicians that come to hear you. For example, I mean, there will be the normal public who'll come to enjoy the sounds and the energy. But I bet you get lots of people who know what you're doing and can understand what you're doing.
Yeah, and I love that. I love having musicians in the crowd,
You were saying just now about an album, A Rebirth, about. And you wanted to talk about that. What was it about that?
Well, A Rebirth was a solo piano project that I did. It's my third solo piano album. I actually composed this piece while I was in hospital. I came out of I was in intensive care.
Mm-hmm. This was for the cancer diagnosis?
I had my kidney removed, actually.
Oh, okay.
So I was recovering from that. I was in ICU. And I woke up one night with this amazing melody in my head. And it just kept going on. And my first instinct is to get up and go to the piano.
Yes.
My wife will tell you that, like at 3 o'clock in the morning, I sometimes hear the piano because I just dreamt it or I had an idea. So I go to the piano. And my first instinct was to get up and go to the piano, but then I realized I had tubes, pipes, and oxygen, and all this. And I lay there thinking of this, and then I gave myself. In those days, you could give yourself a hit of morphine if you were in lots of pain. So I gave myself a hit of morphine. I tried not to do it too much because you can get addicted to it.
Yes.
So is that what happened to Bill Evans as well, eh?
Oh, really?
Yeah, with the morphine. But anyway, so while the morphine kicked in, I saw this piano on the ceiling. I saw the keys. So I went into that for about a couple of hours. And,
wow.
And that's how Rebirth came about. And I recorded it. And when I got home about a week later, I went straight to the piano and I tried to.
And you remembered? That's the main thing.
Parts of it, yes.
Yeah.
And the others I kind of, fitted in, But that's how I. That comes to me in dreams. A lot of the long pieces come in dreams.
Mm-hmm. But then you can get up, can't you? As you say, if you're at home and go to the piano.
Yes.
Would you record then what you played? Because you say you don't write it down.
No, I don't.
But once you've played it, you will remember it.
Yes.
It goes into a filing cabinet.
Those are my stories there, like the way the piano's positioned. And I don't know, I can't explain it. But It's a magical process.
Yeah. You know, one of the other things I saw when I was reading about you is Hilton's cultural roots are evident in his work. He is intensely aware of his social and political surroundings. He describes himself as a mind freedom fighter. I found that very interesting.
As I said, when people that I mentor, when they come out of jazz school, they've been studying jazz now for 3-4 years.
Hmm.
They have the jazz blinkers on,
the
blinkers, so they just see jazz. Now, I try to take the blinkers away and make them see other music because otherwise jazz is just one aspect of my composition, It's what I grew up with. I love jazz. I absolutely love it. But there's other music as well, which we have to accommodate for. You can't frown on other music. As I say, with classical music, that's why I love classical music as well, because of the sounds of it, And
And the variety, really, as well.
Exactly. So basically a mind freedom fighter. I just try to open their minds.
I like the way you say they come out with blinkers on, which I suppose is one of the downsides of a college or a school.
I guess so.
Because you have to work in total direction.
When they teach you jazz, you know, they teach you that certain syllabus, but then they don't deviate from that. They don't go into or take guys to go and see other things, you know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, there's like things happening, like traditional things happening that's amazing. It's mind-blowing. And these people are just playing, you know. And so I love that, you know, going to meet other people of even the Irish folk music is amazing.
Which is very, very important, I think, and unique, Irish folk music.
In fact, we kind of match the Irish folk music to the mouth bow. I had a guy that played the drum, the frame drum.
Yes, yes.
And then it's called a dog.
I know what you mean.
But you know what instrument.
I know what it looks like, but I have no idea what it's called.
Yeah, and the rhythms kind of work. And it's like an Irish jig, you know what I mean?
Oh, yes, yeah.
And it kind of worked out with the tunings, you know, if you play different tunings. So I think all music is related.
Yeah, it's
all music is related because we were once one.
We were one. And
exactly.
It's all music, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all music.
That's
first and foremost.
That's the best way to communicate.
Whether it's Indian or whether it's Brazilian.
It's music.
Whether it's Chinese, whether it's Western classical.
I absolutely loved the Chinese music when we went to Hong Kong.
Oh, did you experience some of that
yes,
too?
Yes, we went to Alex and myself to go walk and we found this group playing on the street. Oh, that music was so beautiful, man, and strange.
Was it Eastern sounding?
It was full Chinese music.
Yeah, Chinese music. Yeah.
Mingnao.
Yeah,
Ali said, "Oh, that guy's got a really easy job. He just got to
come out." Hilton,
yeah.
Let's take another piece of music before you run out of time completely. And this is your father now, is it? No,
it's Chick Corea.
Chick Corea, yes.
Chick Corea has also been a great influence. I absolutely love him. I was also devastated when he passed. I managed to see him when he came here I think it was 1979 when he came here with his group. We managed to see him, he's always been a great. I've been a great admirer of Chick, you know, also because he's also come with different things, and he's also classically. He's used the classical music with, like, he's very influenced by Bartok as well. So, I think I chose Humpty Dumpty. It's from the album Mad Hatter, the Mad Hatter, where he took the Alice in Wonderland story. And this is the story, Humpty Dumpty, but Humpty Dumpty.
Okay, let's listen then to Chick Corea and Humpty Dumpty.
We'll be right back.
Humpty Dumpty, Will Chick Corea, and that piece called Humpty Dumpty. It was a choice of my guest, Hilton Schilder, who's with me on People of Note this week. One of the things I've been wanting to ask you, Hilton, is if someone doesn't know your work or someone doesn't know much about jazz, is there an album or two or three that you would recommend to get used to your sound and what you've done? This is a chance for you to boast.
Okay. Well, I'd say the one album we actually, that was my first, that was my debut solo album, you know. That was recorded in 2003 by Paddy Leithorpe, Mountain Records, also recorded at Murray's studio.
Yes.
That album's called No Turning Back. It's great because I've got people like Robbie Jensen on there, Zane Adams, my father, Mac McKenzie. So I've just got all the royalty.
The Schilder royalty.
Yes. And then another album I did was, it's called, well, I mean, besides the Genuines albums, that was more rock. And the third Genuine album is called Nights of the Cape Gypsies. That's a more jazzy one, you know.
Okay.
And then Alternative, that was also important work for me. I did it with Johnny Blundell.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And we spent a year on that album. It's the first time that I spent so long on an album. Because we listened to it, we put it away, and we came back. And I enjoyed making that album. Because I got Mark Fransman on there, and Bryden Bolton, and Carlo Fabe. My daughter's on there as well, and I've got my friend's daughter singing as well.
Good old family affair.
Yeah, the family affair.
And a piano album to hear what you do with solo keyboard work? Because I think that would be interesting to hear how you deal with harmony and things like that.
There are three solo piano albums. One is, the fourth one's not been released yet. The one is called Live at the Nassau. And then there's one called Rebirth, which is also solo piano. And what was the other one?
The Rebirth one was the one you mentioned about in a hospital.
That's right. Yeah, it's got one of my drawings on it, on the cover.
Oh, yes. We mustn't forget that you're a painter. Yes, an artist.
Yeah. And the other one was called Dedications, which is made for a dedication to different people, my grandmother, Alex, Tagore.
Okay.
You know, we were playing at Tagore's at the time when I did that album.
Hilton, you sound as though you come from a very happy family.
Yeah.
A family that loves music, a family that gets on well. You're in a good space.
Yeah.
Would you agree with me?
Definitely. I'm in a very good space. I mean, I can feel it. There's nothing really that phases me anymore, you know. And I'm just enjoying growing up with my grandkids, you know. They bring so much joy, you know.
Oh, that's what a lovely also, thing. And hopefully they'll also become musicians.
Well, I'll show you some pics of them behind the piano.
So really, as yeah, young as that?
Yeah, they start young. Even the boy, Aiden, he's 10 now. He's more interested in games.
Okay, which many of them
but
are.
But still,
yes.
When he was small, he was already playing the ukulele and that, you know.
My goodness.
So, yeah.
And what's next? You're releasing your album, but then your 46th album. Now, yeah. What is your rest of the year look like?
Well, I'm going into the studio again. We're going to complete the Crooks and Nannies one, those 7 other tracks. I'm going to complete that. And then there's another album coming out, the solo piano one. That is called also Dedications, that Dedications 2. That is something I did with Mari, and that was during COVID.
Oh, yes.
That was my COVID project, you know, where I dedicated. Oh. So,
did COVID affect you a lot work-wise?
Yes, it did.
I'm sure.
But at the same time, I was fortunate to be one of the musicians that got some money from Switzerland, where they paid us every month. They gave us something. You know,
okay, so you could keep going.
A stipend, yes. Yeah. So I was very grateful for that because in the beginning, we were helping dishing out food parcels to the, well, mainly to musicians that were not able to, you know. And people helped me out as well until we got this money, you know. So,
okay. As I said, you sound like you're in a happy place.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, to end, why not play something by your father, the great Tony Shaw?
Yes.
Which you've selected. I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yes.
So what are we going to hear? Tell us a little bit of background.
Well, this one's called Mr. Cool is in the Lounge, and it's a dedication to John Dales. I didn't even remember John Dales. He was a fantastic organist. He was a good friend of my dad. My dad called him Mr. Cool. And I'm playing bass on this track, and Jack Monplay on drums. And this is from the album No Turning Back, where I got my dad to come in, and he's playing on 2 tracks. He's playing on, he's on that track, and then he's playing on For Tony. It's something for him.
Okay, so the track we're going to play now
is Mr. Cool.
He's playing on that track as well.
He's on piano. And I'm on bass, and Jack Mombley on drums.
All right, let's listen and enjoy Tony Schilder's music, the father of my guest Hilton Schilder, who is one of Cape Town's more, or should I say, most distinguished jazz musicians. Hilton, thanks for making the time to come
Great
through.
Great pleasure, Roger.
And best of luck. Keep going in the good space you are.
Thank you. Thank you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.